I'm Gab, he's Jules. As you can see, I'm already in holiday mode because I am getting out of here.
Me too. Saturday, the holidays.
Absolutely, absolutely. Don't worry, we're going to be back in August. This is the show where we review some of our highlights, but then we've got plenty of quick hits because, as you might have heard, Lionel Messi close to signing a new contract, which is a big deal. People leaking mean stuff about Florentino.
What a surprise.
Tons of stuff going on. Erling Haaland as well. But let's start at the top. Let's welcome in Nedim Onuwa, back from spending time in beautiful Bristol, Connecticut, at the mothership.
Yeah.
Nedim, this is how it's going to work, right? We're gonna give out a bit of awards here.
Yep.
And I will be the casting vote. If you guys disagree, I'll be very democratic about it.
Okay.
Very fair.
Okay.
We've got a team of the tournament. We have a best 11. Your official UEFA one came out. Different ones came out. These are always skewed towards countries that go further into tournament. So let's get the show on the road, shall we? I'm assuming you both picked 4-3-3 because it's what God intended.
No.
Already.
No. I went for a 3-4-3.
Okay. Don't. Fix it. Turn it into a 4-3-3.
Yeah, come on.
Okay, drop Kyle. Move Kyle Walker to right back, and then you're good.
Listen, it'll all make sense in a moment. It will all make sense. Don't worry
about
it. All
right, let's start with him with the easy bit. Your goalkeeper, Jules.
PSG legend, Gigi Donnarumma. Yeah. It has to be him. It can only be him. Not only because he was voted player of the tournament himself.
Okay, no, it has to be him. Amazing. No, that's a bad reason. Nedim.
I'm going Donnarumma as well, but I wouldn't say it has to be him, and I'm not sure about player of the tournament either.
Okay, I'm just going to say this about this. All those people put out those stupid Pickford stats. No, he made 11 saves, Donnarumma made 9 saves.
No,
just shut up and go away.
That can't be true.
All right, I would normally say right back here.
But because I'm thinking differently.
No, I can listen. If you want me to turn it to a four, I can turn it to a four if you want.
That would make our life a lot easier. Who's your right back?
Okay, I'll do that then. I'll do that. So my marauding right back is Denzel Dumfries.
Ooh. Nice. Forgotten man from the group stages.
Who can't defend. Yeah, that's him. Yeah. I've got Kyle Walker because I just think that he's been very solid. And talking about defenders who can't defend, he can defend, certainly. And he's as quick as Nedim, so.
Yeah, I got it.
Go on.
Yeah, go on, Nedim. You think you can persuade me with more Dumfries?
No, talk? I was just going to say, he's talking about he can't defend. But how often do you see Kyle Walker attack? You're forgetting the other side of that coin as well.
No. I've got a very, very good winger ahead of my Kyle Walker right back. So I'm fine with Kyle Walker.
I'm a go Walker. Center back. I need two from you, Jules.
Leo Bonucci is one, and Harry Maguire is the other one. Again, makes sense. Best partnership.
Seems very straightforward to me. You got a problem with that, Nedim?
Yeah, same with me. Yeah, I'll go with that.
That's easy.
Why don't we just pick my team and then,
Stop it.
Okay.
Stop it.
No.
Left back. There's only one correct answer here.
Yeah, it's Spinazzola. You know. And as sad as it was to see him missing, obviously, the final, he was still there with his crutches, celebrating on the back of
Daniel. Gimping around. Nedim, you okay with Spina?
Yeah, I'm happy with Spinazzola. When it was going to be a 3-4-3, I was going to go for sure. But instead, because it's a 4, I'll go Spinazzola. Just for you guys.
Thank you for that, Luke Shaw. Come on.
I feel bad now because he had a proper team and a tactics and then you ruined it.
Unlike Southgate.
Oops,
all right. Your three-man midfield. Nedim, you get to go first here. Your three central midfielders. We have some latitude here.
Yes.
Okay, so this is where I think we're going to venture away, okay? So I've gone for Højbjerg, Wijnaldum, and Jorginho.
Ooh.
That's good.
Mm.
So two guys named Jorginho.
Yeah.
In the three. That's how much he loves Jorginho. Jules, who are your three?
I am actually shocked that there's no Pedri in Nathan's. But that's one for another day. My three are Højbjerg.
Yeah.
Completely agree. Paul Pogba, I know he only went to the last 16, but he was amazing from start to the end of that game. And then Pedri, he's 18 years old. What he did was amazing.
All right.
Pressure on you, Judge Judy. Pressure on you.
So Højbjerg, of course, gets in because I think that would be a unanimous choice.
And I thought really underrated by people overall, I thought.
Yeah, I think you need to lose. I think we're going to lose the Wijnaldum there because
that's three goals. Sorry? Three goals. You talk about Pedri, but that's three goals.
Yeah, I know. That's also a stinker in the first knockout round. So that's the problem. As you know, I love me some Paul Pogba. Yeah. And I love me some Pedri as well. But one dude stuck around till the end. So third guy is going to, of course, be Georgi.
So Jorginho, Højbjerg, and Pedri. That's your
is that what I said?
Yeah.
Did I screw up here? Yeah.
You want Pogba in there. Nathan, what was wrong with Pogba? Why is Pogba not in your team?
Just because I had a feeling that... Gab might get funny about people who didn't go as far as maybe they should have done. So I didn't want to put him in just to be ridiculed. But I understand. Paul Pogba is one of my favorite players. But, you know, c'est la vie.
Goal celebration alone. All right. I will now be asking for your two wingers. As you know, Gab and Jules show rules apply, which means none of this, oh, let's put Lukaku out on the wing. Yeah. Let's put Harry Kane on the wing. Yeah. We want real wide players. Yes. Yeah?
Yes. We do.
Simple then. It's for me, it's Chiesa and Sterling.
I have to agree.
Raheem, difficult to argue that one.
Raheem the Dream and Federico Enrico, 25 years on, you know.
Yeah, that's easy. And now your center forward, and I am so looking forward to all the fanboys getting angry if you make the wrong decision on this one.
Am I going first or Nathan first?
Let's make you go first, Jules, so Nathan can adjust.
My pick is Patrick Schick for the simple reason that with a very average Czech team, this is not the 96 generation at all. For him to score five goals, the kind of goals that he scored, you know, there's obviously the lob against Scotland, but there's a lot of great goals in terms of positioning, movement, intelligence. I think he deserves to be in there because I think this is worth 10 goals for a top country.
All right, Nathan, over to you. You know a lot about strikers because you used to stop them scoring.
Yeah, I try to. So what I would say is that there was one person who performed better than Patrick Schick, and that was Cristiano Ronaldo. I think if you pick a team that doesn't have the guy who scored the most goals, he also had an assist. And if you take him out of that team, Portugal, what do they have?
They scored the same amount of goals.
But Cristiano won the golden boot.
Patrick Schick was robbed of a left golden boot. And as we said, Cristiano could have had the right golden boot. And Cristiano scored two tap-ins and three pens.
Okay. You're not going to make me adjudicate on this one. Okay, I'm going to pick...
Sorry, Gabs. I forgot. Like, if you score from 40 yards, it counts as two goals, doesn't it? Sorry, Jules. My fault. Sorry,
let me remind you that Cristiano... Right, didn't go as far as Patrick Schick,
and it was a bunch of penalties and whatever.
And with a team that was by far better than Patrick Schick's team, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. Listen, that team was better, but how many players in that team scored goals compared to Ronaldo? If you take Ronaldo and those goals out of that team, where do they finish?
Same with Schick and the Czech Republic.
All right.
What? Sorry.
Unfortunately, I have to make a call on this one, and simply because I am terrified of all the Cristiano fanboys out there.
I'm leaving this.
No, but you're not. Come
on. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to fight the power. I'm going to give it to Patrick Schick because you know what? That goal does count double, and the penalties count half as much. So, Cristiano, you got the golden boot. You're one of the greatest in history. I'm
so
sure.
Just so we're clear. The Italian is saying penalties only count half after winning the tournament from penalties.
No. That is below the bet.
There's a distinction here which between penalties that you earn by taking a dive after running past Melee and penalties you earn at the end of the game. As a tiebreaker, and that you actually score and save.
They still need to be scored, though. That's the thing. Yeah. That is the big thing.
We could have had OG as our striker, you know, because own goal, 11 goals, no one can beat that. No one has ever beaten that.
That is true.
In fairness, OG could have
been that would be sort of very French surrealist. Anyway, this is your team of the tournament. Gigi Donnarumma in goal, Kyle Walker and Spinazzola are your fullbacks. Bonucci and Chiellini, sorry, it was almost automatic. Bonucci and Maguire are your center backs. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, Jorginho and Pedri in midfield. Your wingers are Chiesa and Sterling. Your center forward is, very close call, Patrick Schick. All right, now we have a bunch of other awards to give out. Not very imaginative awards, but the fun is the discussion that goes on around them.
I just want to say that in my team, my 11 players, 10 have made the final team that you picked, Judge Judy. I'm just saying, either you've watched the games or you haven't. That's all I'm saying.
It's a bit hard.
Listen. No, listen. It's the Gab and Jules podcast, so obviously, you know, the Gab and Jules have to agree with each other. That's fine. I'm just a guest here. I'm not on every week. That's fine.
Can I point out, Nadim was locked in a room in Bristol, Connecticut.
True, yeah, that's true.
I'm sure he had little to do other than watch every minute of every game, okay? So let's just be very, very clear. We get our money's worth when we find people halfway around the world,
yeah,
okay?
Listen, I bring logic, you bring emotion. That's fine, Jules. That's fine. You do that. That's fine.
Actually, but before we go on with a thing about logic and emotion, I just want to ask you about this. We haven't talked about this before. This caused a huge stink in Italy. Here, obviously, with everything else that happened around the final, it kind of didn't get as much attention. I don't know 100% how I feel about it, but I want to get your view as a player. A bunch of people were offended by the fact that some of the England players, not everybody, you know, they received their medal from Cheffrin, and immediately as they walk past, they're all grumpy. They immediately take their medals off. Now, to me, it's interesting. I didn't pay much attention at the time because I've seen it obviously happen before. It's happened with a bunch of different players.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah, Champions League final and all of that.
It's something that we've seen in the last couple of years. Mm. Somebody made a big deal out of this, that when Pep Guardiola lost the Champions League final against Chelsea, he kind of did the opposite. He actually went, there's video of him kissing the runner-up medal. So I get this whole argument that if you get a runner-up medal, you know, you're the first of the losers, but you're still a loser and you don't want to be reminded of it, so you take your medal off. I get that thing. But I think even people who hate Pep Guardiola would agree that he is anything but a loser, given that as a player and as a manager, I think he's won close to 50 trophies in his career. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, Nadim, I don't know if you ever received a runner-up medal in your career or if it's something that you would even think about. What's your take on it as a player?
I think that is interesting because as far as receiving a medal in a final which you've just lost, you do feel like a loser. So it feels like a reward for being a loser. Like, don't get me wrong. I lost, here's a story for you. So I lost in European Championships under-21s final in 2009 to a Germany team that had Khedira, Ozils, Hummels, Boatengs, all those guys. Like, they killed us in the final. And we were presented with a medal for losing 4-0 to that side in our first final since whenever. And you have it. And I still have the medal to this day. And I do treasure it now. But in the moment, it's a very hard thing to celebrate because you don't think about the bigger picture. You've just lost a game which you were desperate to win. So to wear that round your neck and be walking around with it, it's not really something which you feel proud about in that moment because you feel like you failed. So I get why people would take it off. But then I would guarantee, well, I can't guarantee for certain, but most of those people will treasure that medal and keep that medal either as inspiration for trying to do better next time or as a feeling of, you know, this, I'm very proud of my achievement. Because for those England players, you know, they're hurt in the moment, but that's the most successful England side that I've seen in my lifetime. So yeah, that can't be taken away from them. So, like I say, I get why they took it off. But then I think the bigger snub would be to not turn up to receive your medal. And I think some people, if they really, really were negative about it, I think they'd probably do that first.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I've, you know, apart from tournament when I was a kid, I was never in your position. But the Olympics are coming up.
You never finished second. You always won.
Yeah, I always won. But there's the Olympics coming up. And certainly you've never seen a silver medalist at the Olympics, whatever the sport. You know, going onto the podium on that when they give you the medals and taking it off. I mean, maybe there's been one I've missed it, but I don't remember. So why are footballers feeling very differently to any other sports professional athletes that compete for all those big titles and feel like it's the right thing or the thing they want to do to just take it off because they lost the final, like someone will lose the 100-meter final or the 200-meters final or basketball final or, you know, whatever.
No, I think there's a subtle difference because in terms of track and field and stuff, when you go out there, especially at Olympics or something, the aim is to try and win a medal. You know, for some people, they will win the gold. That's their aim, to try and win the gold. But the people who are disappointed with having a silver, but they have to go and stand on the podium and wear it around the neck because that's the tradition of what they do. Whereas in football, the tradition is realistically to receive your medal. and for the winning team to receive theirs and celebrate with the trophy. But as I say, in terms of track, like, there are tons of people who will, like, someone finishing fourth is as disappointed as, say, like, a team event finishing second because you've just lost something. Because as far as a 100-meter race goes, there are probably 8 to 10 individuals there who are trying to get onto the podium. That's the goal. You know, you can think about it in terms of, like, F1 as well. People do want to win, but you want to get on the podium. Being on the podium means everything. That is the celebration itself. You can be disappointed you didn't finish first, but you're still there because everyone would probably give everything to be in the spot that you are. But as far as football goes, you know, especially because it's such a drawn out process as well. It's not one race between 10 people. It's like a whole tournament, but it's very easy to forget about the other things.
I think it's that. I think it's the mindset that...
Yeah, but you have it for the basketball tournament, collective sports.
But what I'm saying is when you get to the final, you know that the worst you can do is finish second. So in some ways, mentally, the celebration of that achievement has already been reached, right? So it's binary. You either win the tournament or you lose on the day. Mm. And I don't think in that moment they saw it as like, oh, look, you know, we've gone further than any England team in history. Oh, look, we're losers today. We lost. And I think that takes over. Now, that said, personally, I think it's entirely disrespectful to your opponent and to the competition. And I know that some of these guys, especially some of the younger players who did it, you know, they've probably seen, because this didn't start with England. This started a couple years ago. I wish that they would look at this, learn from Pep. Because if Pep can go... After final, that's by the way, we criticized Pep for a lot of decisions he made in the final, which he could say, I screwed up here, that he would take it and show such a respect to his runner-up medal because he knows what went into it. I hope people learn from that. And as a minimum,
I think people do respect their medals, but just not in that particular moment where emotionally they're at their lowest.
They should. You know what? Because... emotionally, you may be at your lowest, but there are still certain norms of behavior. It's not a good look.
Yeah.
It's not a good look. And for a coach like Gareth Southgate, who's gone out of his way and has successfully, I think, presented a good look, put together perhaps the most universally liked England team, certainly in my lifetime, that was maybe, look, he can't cover every detail himself, but I think that is something that... Or maybe England won't have the problem because they'll never reach another final again.
Doesn't Mourinho even take off the medal that after he's won? You know, he does that thing where he says that he's just won it, but he's already thinking about the next one.
But he does that for a different reason.
You know what I've got issue with as well is the players who've been on the losing side. And like Nathan said, it can happen. Sometimes it's a narrow lose. Sometimes it's a big loss. And not watching the winners lifting their trophy and going back to the dressing room
Which is what a number of England players did.
For England players, but for example, one of my children the other day lost a big tournament in the final in extra time. And they went to get their medals. And then the team that won had the trophy straight after. And I almost said to him, come on, let's go home now. I was so gutted for him. And, you know, they were all crying.
That would have been very bad parenting.
Yeah. And I thought, you know what? No, of course, he has to be there and he has to applaud the winners because that's what you do. Yeah. And to see England, but not just England, but many others have done it. I've got an issue with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'll say that is that it can't be an English thing because we don't see England in finals. So just because we've seen it this one time.
Did you watch Manuel Neuer? Did you stay on the pitch to watch Manuel Neuer lifting that trophy with Mesut Ozil and all the others?
Oh yeah, because we had to. That's the thing, we had to. But you're desperately disappointed because for them, when they lift that trophy, like, they're celebrating in front of you. And if you know the way that game finishes, you go and you shake hands and say congratulations anyway. So every moment from then, it feels like you're going through torture. As opposed to, you know, you are essentially doing the right thing, as you say, in terms of sportsmanship. But they're not, like, going to tone down the celebration because you're looking. They're sticking it into you so hard, twisting a knife, everything. And you're just there like, yeah, congratulations, guys.
Well, look, yeah, I think the good thing here is that given the rate at which England reach finals, we'll probably all be retired in 55 years when you reach the next one. I'm just kidding.
just kidding.
We kidding because we love.
Don't
all
worry.
Right.
I'm not concerned.
Best goal of the tournament. I can probably guess where this one's going, but let's start with Nathan.
Okay, so there was obviously all the talk about Schick and so on, and I think that's a very good goal, but the one for me was the Modric one against Scotland. And the reason I say that is because probably 7 or 8 out of 10 players that I know, if they attempted it, they'd break their ankles. So ultimately, that skill that he's done there is very specific to people like him and charisma, and it's incredibly unique. And with that, it's something which I'd say he'd probably score that 6-7 times out of 10 as well. So it's very, very specific. It's a very specific talent. It's one where you look at it and think, well, I'm not really going to be able to do that. With the Shikwan, obviously, it's a great strike and everything fell in play. But, you know, you can drop the ball to him there 10 times. He might only do that once with the same sort of setup. But in Modric, like, it's, for me, it's special and it shows his talent. And that's a very, very unique goal for me.
Yeah, so I had Sheik as mine because I just think it's incredible. And again, I think many players can try it, and he can maybe even try it again, Sheik himself, and not score it. But Nathan made a great point about Modric, which was also on my list, with the, as well as the Pogba goal against Switzerland. And I would be very happy if you pick either Modric or Sheik. I'm just saying.
I'm going to go Modric on this one. I thought Nathan was more. Yeah. Was more. The other thing about
Sheik. No, but I agree with him. It's an amazing goal.
I don't think there was luck involved with Sheik, but I could also imagine like a big burly center half just lumping the ball and getting lucky. You know,
you don't see those many often either.
No, you don't, because defenders don't often shoot from inside. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
But again, both special goals. We have our best moment of the tournament here.
So my one was like a period of time, and it was the moment Denmark needed to score some goals to get into the next round. So I think it was in their third group game against Russia, and things weren't going their way. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, there was a change in energy. And for them, being at home, being in Copenhagen, playing the game that they were playing, and goals were flying in, like, to be in that arena, if you were supporting Denmark, must have been absolutely incredible. To be a player on the field in that moment must have been absolutely incredible. So that moment for me was probably the best overall, because after a year and a half of not having fans in stadiums, to see stuff like that kind of reminds you of like the best bits about football, if you can get that opportunity to feel that type of thing.
Yeah, well, and the fact that obviously this was impacted by what was happening in the Belgium game at the same time as well, the back and forth, that really stands out. Yeah. Jules?
For me, there can only be one here. And this one that hurts personally, because it was at the end of the France-Switzerland game and France had been knocked out in the penalties. And you know, we know the scenario of the game being 3-1 up with 10
minutes. You're going to bring up Rabiot's mom again. Here we go.
Because I think, you know, the next day where you speak to people and you get text messages and people start telling you what happened in the dressing room afterwards. And then you get this call where someone said, you will never guess. You will never guess what happened in the family's stands. And you go like, what? And you don't even think like that Adrien Rabiot's mum could say to Kylian Mbappé's dad, sat literally next to her, go and sort your son out because he's too arrogant. I mean, who does that? In what world? In what country? Who? What mum goes to another player's dad, or be Kylian Mbappé, and goes, hey, sort out your son now, will you? Like, what?
Somebody who is a genuine fan, that's who.
What world do we live in? This has to be the best moment of this tournament everywhere. I mean, come on.
All right.
Nothing can beat this.
I'm going to overrule it with something else. I'm going to overrule it. I'll just give you my best moment, and then we can put them all as co-best moments. And it's got nothing to do with football. It is, obviously, like many people, we were watching the Denmark-Finland game. Mm. I'll put my hand up. I thought that Christian Eriksen had left us. And there's the photo as he's being stretchered off the pitch. I think a Getty photographer got it, where you can see that his hand is up by his head. And all I could think of, he must have moved his hand to his head. He must have moved his hand to his head, which means that he's not gone. For me, that moment, and again, who knows? Maybe he might have happened afterwards. Maybe somebody might have moved his hand. I don't think so. But for me, that moment just gave so much hope, because we really didn't know. And I know there's been debate, are the cameras too intrusive, the players, blah, 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 the shock, going back, all this stuff that happened. And it feels like the last European champion. It feels so long ago because so much stuff has happened. But for me, that idea that, you know, that sense of immediate relief and knowing he wasn't out of danger or whatever, but that for me was just overwhelming.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
My other best moments, I get to have two. Obviously, it's a very personal one. I wrote a column about it.
Oh,
up on the website.
Gianluca.
It's seeing Luca Vialli by himself in the middle of the pitch. You know, everybody, all the players come out before. I talked about this before. All the players are out there, like, and they go and they do the walkabout on the pitch in their suits. They all go away. And he stands out there on the Wembley pitch for what felt like forever. And given that this is somebody who's been through so much, somebody I've known for 25 years, lives around the corner from me in London, both moved here around the same time. I choked up. I have choked up at football matches I've covered professionally, but usually after the final whistle, like when the Matrix got Zidane sent off.
Or yeah,
when
of course. Yeah.
Italy, of course, beat Germany in their own house at the Westfalen. But that was after the game. This was before the game. Never experienced that before. All right, our player of the tournament, Nadim. This one's easy. Or not.
Is it?
It's not. I wouldn't know where to begin.
I didn't get the info before the show to know what to say next. So I thought Donnarumma was very good and so on. And when you look how young he is as well, it's incredible. But the player that impressed me personally the most because of how key he was for his team would be Højbjerg for Denmark. I thought he performed to a level which I hadn't really seen or expected from him before. Like, I think this year for Spurs, he was great. But in this tournament, he looked like a completely... Like, he even stepped it up further. And I think with Christian Eriksen being missing and so on, I don't think they go as far if he wasn't playing to the standard that he was at.
Ooh, interesting show. Interesting one. More of a technical one.
I went for Bonucci, not just for the goal in the final that obviously bring the team back in, but also the penalties that he scored both in the final and in the semi-final, and just the leadership, and also that feeling that we both had before the tournament, asking questions about the Bonucci-Chiellini partnership, yeah. Bonucci on his own, you know, what kind of level will be at, what kind of leadership can he bring, Chiellini, can they get sent off, can he get injured, will they get sent off, will they get injured?
And Chiellini and did in get injured,
end,
of course.
Yeah, but in the end, for Bonucci, I felt it was almost like a near-perfect tournament where he never made a mistake, pretty much, and was a perfect leadership. And I think when I see what happens before the parade in Rome, where they almost were preventing from doing that parade, and both Chiellini and Bonucci made sure that the parade happened, I just think that I would want that kind of leader in my team. So Bonucci for me.
All right. I can't even pick a player of the Italy side because he was just it's just so spread out, whether it's Bonucci, Jorginho, Chiesa, whatever. Chiellini, Spina. Would have been Spina for me if he hadn't gotten injured. I think these are good choices. Flop of the tournament. We're going to end it by mocking somebody cruelly. I don't like this category because
we don't have to
be all peace and love going, but that's okay. You guys are more mean-spirited. So let's start with you, Jules.
For me, the flop of this tournament...
I mean, don't say Southgate. Come on.
No, it's a bit harsh. Although he's a bit part of my answer, but it has to be some managers that we saw. And three, especially in Fernando Santos, Frank de Boer, and Didier Deschamps, because I do think that those three managers had so much talent at their disposal and yet played, I mean, Fernando Santos and Deschamps especially, in such a bad way, such a conservative way, with not enough ideas, not enough direction, not enough work, I feel. I feel that it was also lacking work before the tournament of what you want to do during the tournament that you can prepare a training. For De Boer, I mean, you know, my feelings.
The expectations were low.
He's a clown. But that's where I felt let down by those managers. And Southgate, of course, he went to the final. But to a certain extent, I still feel he should have done much better with that team in terms of performances and what they did with the ball.
Nadim?
So the Southgate thing, like, I'll have to push back just a little bit because I think you have you've got too much of an expectation in terms of English football. Like, just think back. England traditionally do nothing at tournaments, like nothing. So even though they were conservative, that's what was needed to get them to that position. So I can never really take that away from him. And overall, like in my lifetime, he's probably been the most successful England manager because that's back-to-back tournaments where they've made it to at least the semi-final, which again is completely unheard of, regardless of what the football is.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But, for me, the biggest disappointment, I think you've alluded to them there. I think I'd have to say the French side, but I'll say specifically the French side in that Switzerland game.
Yeah.
Just because at 3-1 as world champions, the game should be done. I remember I was in Bristol at this point, and I was going from the offices to go to the studio to get ready for ESPN FC because the game was going to finish. And by the time I got down there, the game was 3-3 and we were watching extra time. Well, that was such a shock. Because that team, for what it is, or what it could be rather, this should never happen. You know, Switzerland are good, but as world champions, it should never happen.
And you know, the worst is that the 25 minutes where they scored the three goals, I think where, really, I know Italy have played great and Spain have played great, but those 25 minutes have been the best 25 minutes of any team in this tournament. So, and that, just to go back to the point Nadim just made, this is how they should play the whole time. And you can't play like this for 90 minutes. You control, you've got strong members. Right. But this is their level. And yet we only saw it for a little bit against Germany and then 25 minutes against Sweden. And then the arrogance came back in and that overconfidence and all of that. And I think it's so disappointing. And I agree, you can give the flop to France. I will not forgive you ever, neither of you two. But you can do it if you want to. I'm just saying.
I'm just going to say, I don't view it as a flop because you knew my views on Deschamps going into the tournament. And obviously it's a surprise they get knocked out with so much talent, but I always kind of felt, hey guys, easy. Deschamps' game plan, similar to Southgate's game plan.
Very minimal.
With the difference that, you know, you had much better attackers and you had Pogba midfield. And that was an option which, you know, Southgate also had a lot of talent, but different sort of thing. You don't have individual match winners like Benzema or Mbappe, or maybe England had Kane, but that's it at that level right now. But anyway, that does bring us to an end here on this segment. Thanks, Nathan.
No, thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Euros. Jules, how about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Lionel Messi is no longer unemployed, or rather, he still is, but he's reached an agreement on a new contract. And
that's right.
Reportedly, it's a 5-year deal that runs through 2026 when he turns 39. But Jules, there's more here than meets the eye.
There's more as well. There's a release clause somewhere that if he wants to go to MLS, which we know that's his ambition and that's what he wants to do before 2026, then he would be able to. There's obviously the wages cut into two. I mean, he was on $75 million a year before bonuses. So that's a significant cut, of course, and for Barca wage bill too. But this is the end of the saga where all the other clubs who maybe dreamt, like PSG and Man City, I don't know, who it could sign for them, it won't happen.
I might add a couple things on this. All right. So first of all, to all our colleagues who reported, this is the funniest part. Like, we in the media, we have this terrible habit that when people give us information, we report it. Even if they give us stupid, irrelevant information, the most irrelevant part is that his new contract will have a release clause, which instead of being $700 million, is $510 million.
Yeah,
that was my favorite part. I'm like, okay, what does this mean? The interesting thing is, I think we still have to wait to get the details, because these are the details that have come out from the Barcelona end.
Yeah.
And he hasn't signed it yet. He's gone on holiday. Mm-hmm. Presumably, he'll sign it, I guess, when he comes back from holiday. But what's interesting is, he's going to, when you factor in that he signed a 5-year deal. So he's essentially spreading the wages from the 2-year deal he wanted to sign over 5 years, But obviously in 5 years, who knows where he's going to be. And there's a penalty clause if his contract gets canceled earlier. Once you factor that in, other aspects, essentially in the first 2 years were Barcelona to terminate his contract, perhaps to let him go to MLS.
Yeah.
He's going to end up earning not far off from what he was earning at now.
Yeah.
And by the way, the number that you see now, obviously that includes a whole bunch of bonuses and stuff like that. There's also a signing bonus. I think in the end, we should think of this as a 2-year deal with the fact that it's spread over 5 years, because Barcelona have serious budgetary issues.
So you're disappointed because you've always asked him, and we know he watches the show, to take a significant pay cut for the good of the club, saying like, look, they're in such a bad position, do your bit. And
I'm in two minds about it. I don't know the exact status of the club. I don't think Messi does either. I would feel that On the one hand, you'd be disappointed. On the other hand, right now you're giving all this money to Aguero. I know he's my friend and everything, but you know, look, he deserves it. Yeah. I think it's as simple as that.
And, you know, everybody knows, Gab, that Barcelona are under serious pressure to cut their wage bill. I guess that's why maybe we're hearing more and more about a potential Antoine Griezmann, Saúl Ñíguez kind of swap deal.
Yeah, look, this would be one of those swap deals that, again, is done for accounting purposes. I mean, I think from Barcelona's perspective, given that Depay and Aguero are coming in, given that Ansu Fati is going to be fit, we presume, you get a massive earner off your books and you replace him with a guy who plays a different position in Saúl, who presumably makes less money.
Far less, yeah.
Yeah, what I would say here is I think Griezmann has got 3 years left on his deal, if I'm not mistaken. He would need to take a pay cut. Or, you know, do one of those spread over longer period type situations. Because Luis Suarez has got another year as well. Yeah. And it's a great story. Oh, Griezmann back to Atleti where it all began. Not where it began, but, you know, where he plays best football. But Atleti already have Suarez, Moussa Dembele, Ángel Correa.
Dembele has gone back to Lyon.
Oh, sorry.
Joao Felix.
There's still a lot of bodies there. Vitolo, I guess, is gone too. But I don't quite know that you can make this. They've spent $35 million, of course, on Rodrigo de Paul.
Yeah.
I don't quite know how you make this work out numbers wise from their end, unless both these players, well, Griezmann, unless he takes a big pay cut.
But when you think that Barcelona paid $120 million 2 years ago for him, and because that was the release clause, they paid it in one installment, and now they're trying to do this thing where basically he goes. It doesn't cost you anything to let him go and to get
someone. It's almost like the Luis Suarez deal. And I think psychologically also they're like, what if this comes back to haunt us?
That's crazy.
The Rafael Varane to Manchester United story rumbles on. Now, again, like you're going to meet a secret. Everybody's using the exact same language here. Quote, personal terms, not an issue. No, I've seen this everywhere. I've seen this in Sky, in Gazette, in Bild. Personal terms, not an issue. That is a hint that somebody says he going to get paid whatever he wants. That suggests to me that United have already reached a deal with Varane's people and they just need to work out a transfer fee with Real Madrid.
I believe that's right, Gab. Yes, the negotiation or the discussions between Varane's camp and United have been going for a few weeks now, and there wouldn't be any problems of finding an agreement. Yeah. It's not already on paper and ready to be signed. But like we've been saying, the hardest bit will be between Real Madrid and United. He's got 1 year left on his contract, but you can expect Real to still want quite a lot of money for that.
So, and I wonder if Varane's thinking, personal terms not an issue, let me ask for more.
Yeah. El Confidencial in Spain, the media in Spain, has released leaked audio of Florentino Perez, the Real Madrid president, saying not very nice thing about Iker Casillas, Raul, Jorge Mendes, Cristiano Ronaldo, Vicente del Bosque as well. It's a very old audio between 06 and 12 pretty much. Does that matter, Gab? And what's going on?
This is weird because it means that somebody was talking to Florentino, taped them 15 years ago, and said, let me just keep this to one side. This might come in handy one day. You know,
it doesn't matter how old he is, right? He still said it. As long as he still said it.
Who cares if he said it 15 years ago in that context when he was having a dispute with Iker and Raul? It's not like he said the stuff he said about Jorge Mendes. He called them frauds.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is serious. Stuff he said about Jorge Mendes is like, he can't control Cristiano and Mourinho. This is fine. Cristiano and Mourinho are their own people. You can't blame Jorge Mendes for not controlling them.
He said the idiot. He said Cristiano is an idiot.
But he's within the context.
Still.
But again, it was 9 years ago. Cristiano doesn't work for him anymore. I think what's interesting is who would leak these now and why. Obviously, the Florentino defenders come out and say, it's UEFA, the Super League, blah, blah, blah. It's got nothing to do with the Super League. Come on now. It's obviously somebody who doesn't like Florentino.
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody who just said, this video is getting old. I better go and sell it, or this audio rather, and pass it on to somebody before it goes to waste and everybody forgets who these people are.
You know what I love is that Marca on the next day, nothing, not even a line, to show you who controls Marca.
Erling Haaland is back in training after a summer of Instagram. Jan-Åge Fjørtoft and others reporting that Borussia Dortmund believe Chelsea are preparing a bid. Would it make sense to you, Jules?
Yeah, of course it does. Go and try. If you can get him now and beat everybody to the race that everybody's waiting for next season and the release close, why not? Why not try now? If you've got that money, try.
This is cynical me. If I was Borussia Dortmund, this is exactly what I'd be doing. I would be telling people, we expect there's going to be
bids. I don't care what Dortmund said. If you're Marina, and if you're Chelsea, if you're Tuchel, Scott McLaughlin, if you're there, tempt them. go and put a big offer in and see what Dortmund. And for all we know, Dortmund say, no, we're not interested. 150 million, we don't care. We're going to wait next year. 75 million release clause. And you go, okay, but at least you've tried and tempt them, because they might also say, okay, we take the money and you've got Haaland now, the most coveted player right now, instead of going for a race with everybody next year.
The problem with that logic, as we said all along, is Haaland has to agree with this and Mino Raiola has to agree with this. So you still got to deal with that.
Yeah, I know.
And if I'm Mino Raiola and Haaland, I'd be like, yeah, let's talk next year.
Yeah, you know,
let's talk next year, because that extra 100 million that you're going to have to give to Dortmund, you can just give to me instead.
Of course, But if you're Chelsea, you've got that money, try. From one centre forward to another, Gab, Olivier Giroud will undergo his medical in Milan tomorrow morning. So that's Friday morning, for real this time. And we've got details on the fee as well.
Yeah, apparently it's 1 million euros to sign him.
Cheap.
And another million in bonuses that they have to get into the top four. He's got to play so many minutes. I think it's a good deal. He's not going to play with Ibra. He'll be the alternative to Ibra. Nothing wrong with that. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has cancelled the England team's visit to Downing Street. Jules, it's probably just me, but I imagine it's because he knew many guys simply wouldn't show up.
Oh, yeah, I think it is. And then when he saw the criticism that some players, and rightly so, expressed after the final, I think he was right. And, I mean, even if Priti Patel had been there, it would have been even worse, probably. So, good on them. We, you know, they don't need that.
Preach on, Tyron Mings. Preach on.
Yeah, well done, Tyron. The Department of Media, Culture and Sport has opened an inquiry into the events at Wembley on the final, Gab, and the breakdown in policing and control. That's only right, right? That's what he's expecting.
It is absolutely right. It is absolutely right. They need to know what happened, because we put our trust in police to keep us safe. And it's not 19 cops had to be hospitalized after what happened. So clearly, I'm not having it go at individual cops. I'm having it go at the people at the top who said, this is our plan. Well, guess what? Your plan sucked, okay? all the people in there without fans. I mean, you saw everything that happened.
Crazy.
We need a full inquiry. I also want an inquiry. And the Wembley spokesman, who told us at ESPN and other outlets, there was a small security issue, but there's no fans inside the stadium. Nothing to see here.
Of course.
Just, I know, like, you're only following orders. That's what people in the past said. You should know better. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. Marcus Rashford was carrying an injury at the Euros, and we now know he'll need surgery and be out until October. Jules, how big a deal is this for United?
Well, start with his own, you know, health, and it's a shoulder surgery which has been bothering him. They also will look at his ankle, who's been in pain for a long, long time now. So maybe it's a good time for him to get proper rest. He hadn't had much of a rest if you look into it for the last few years. But I think it's a big blow for United. Of course, they've got depth in the squad, and Jadon Sancho is coming in, and you can play Greenwood, Sancho, Cavani, and Pogba and Bruno behind it. So they will have options and solutions. But I think you would want your best players always to be ready for the start of the season, because then he would play catch up. He would come back from injury, have to do his own pre-season if you want, work on his fitness and all of that, which when you're on your own, it's not ideal.
I know this is, obviously this is hindsight, but if you're Manchester United, would it have been fair to go to Southgate and say, hey, look, are you going to actually use Marcus at the Euros? Because if you're not going to use him, you know, other than to set him up to miss a penalty,
He
could have not gone, had his surgery, and been ready for the start of the season.
Exactly.
Equally, I would assume Rashford's a competitor. He probably said, no, I want to be there. I want to be part of it.
But there are times where you need to take decisions for your own health that are more important than anything.
I can completely understand the Rashford's point of view.
Oh, yeah, completely. Liverpool continue to be linked with a number of players to replace Gini Wijnaldum, who's left the club. Yuri Tielemans is one. Saul is another one if he doesn't go to Barcelona. Manuel Locatelli as well. Yves Bissouma from Brighton. Who do you like best to do that role, to have that job?
I think I like... The guy I like best is the guy I think is the best player out of all these, and that's Yuri Tielemans. Mm-hmm. Everybody got kind of excited about it. My understanding from our colleague Christophe Terreur, it's quite close to him, is that he's not asked for a move or anything. Euros are just over. Obviously, if you put enough money on the table, it can happen. But Tielemans is going to be expensive.
Very expensive.
If only because he was, if Liverpool go and knock at Leicester and say, we want to bid for Tielemans, then Leicester will no doubt tell him, well, he was Gab Marcotti's choice for player of the season. Therefore, you got to start thinking
prime.
Nine figures here, right?
Exactly, prime price. For
but he's the best. The most attainable would do a good job for them, I think, is Yves Bissouma, who would obviously cost you a lot less.
Yeah, I agree.
The Daily Mail are reporting that Manchester City are targeting Bayern's Robert Lewandowski as an alternative to Harry Kane. Jules, are you buying this?
No. It's a no. I mean, okay, Lewandowski might want to leave Bayern. I mean, I don't know.
He might want to be reunited with Pep?
Yeah, maybe. But I think this is... I mean, there's no way Bayern would...
It'd be a good choice, right?
Slightly to that. I know Pini Zahavi, who is Lewandowski's agent, maybe is keen on a move and the commission that comes with it. But there's no way in a million years that Bayern could let that happen anyway. So... If you think that getting Kane out of Spurs would be hard, just imagine getting Lewandowski out of Bayern.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one difference with the Lewandowski thing is you create some sort of scenario, maybe Haaland in a year's time and Lewandowski. But the thing about Harry Kane, but I go back to this. I think they knew City. They knew getting Harry Kane was going to be difficult.
Yeah.
They knew that. And that's why this whole thing with, again, the people looking after Harry Kane, I really got a question. Did you want to get the move? Because you've painted yourself into a corner here. Would they be? Do they need a striker?
They do. I don't buy that at all. They do, Gab. They do. Of course they do. They can't just start the season with Gabriel Jesus and like Liam Delap and players like that. And
what about Phil Foden? He's pretty good.
But he's not. They need striker. You need, even if you play with a false number nine for most of the season, you still need striker. And I'm not even sure Gabriel Jesus is actually a striker in the pure sense of the word, like a Lewandowski, certainly Lewandowski is. So I think they might not sign anyone and still be amazing, and of course they can, but I think they need someone.
I would maybe put all my I'd keep my resources and look maybe to do a deal next summer, and maybe you get a striker for one season.
Yeah, you've said that. A middle range striker. That makes sense too. But if Kane does go, Gab, there are plenty of reports that Spurs could be going for Dusan Vlahovic, the Fiorentina striker, although it won't be cheap.
No, they're talking 60 million, but more importantly, my man Joe Barone, former New York Cosmos executive, now in charge at Fiorentina, or Joe Barone, as we like to call him in Italy, coming out quite clearly and saying, we want to extend Dusan Vlahovic's deal. He's got 2 years left. He's 21 years old.
He's been amazing this season.
He's been really good. You know what? He's got all the tools. They don't always come together, but he's got the size. He's got the technical ability. He's extremely athletic. I think he'd be a really good signing. The way he plays, I think he'd be a good signing for City, actually.
If
you are looking for that kind of mid-range tie, you're over. But my hunch is that he's going to end up sticking around. Rafa Benitez has had his first days as new Everton boss, and predictably, he's been met by banners asking him politely to go away. In more industrial language, no surprise.
I felt a bit for him. I have to say, listening to him doing that press conference, because obviously there was a lot of questions that we asked him about what he said when he was the Liverpool manager, that Everton were a small club, and he had to defend himself and justify himself and all of that, and saying, but I was defending my club at the time, and now it's different. I'm here for Everton's best interest, all of that. You knew what he was going to say. He said, many of the fans that I've met were actually okay with me being here, and Liverpool fans too. It's like, but some are not happy in either camps. Focus on work. The best he can do is start the season well with victories, with good football, playing well, and then that will win them over. If you start with a defeat, then a draw, then another defeat, then you know exactly what's going to happen.
Can we also put the Everton are a small club comment in context, because I remember very, very well about what happened. I think it was either in his first or second season at Liverpool, and maybe he wasn't educated enough about the history. But he was speaking within the context of playing against opponents who, you know, where you're the more talented club and they sit and they defend, right? It's the equivalent of, you know, if you're playing, in his mind, you're playing Burnley or Crystal Palace.
Yeah, exactly.
He said, they'll defend deep, they'll make life difficult for you. And that is where Everton were in the table.
Yeah.
In fact, where Everton have been, they've been generally mid-table or below, and even a smaller club in terms of, I'm careful what I say here, but in terms of style of play, in terms of budget, than Liverpool for the last 15 years. So that is how he saw it. He wasn't trolling them.
No.
I don't think. That said, again, I don't think he should have gone, but hey, what do I know?
Bild in Germany are reporting that Chelsea are plotting to sign Federico Chiesa from Juventus. Gab, what do you make of this, apart from the fact that he's actually not a Juventus player technically yet?
That's one of the main things. They wouldn't be negotiating with Juventus. They'd be negotiating with Fiorentina, because, of course, it's a two-year loan deal with where they have to pay, I think it was $4 million last year, $6 million they have to pay this year. And then after that, they pay the balance, which I think is $50 million. Unless they don't finish, Juve don't finish in the top four, in which case he reverts to being a Fiorentina player. So it's a pretty complicated situation that's there. Look, Chiesa's phenomenal. I'm sure he'd do very well at Chelsea, but surely Chelsea have other priorities, and surely, you know, wingers can't be a priority for Chelsea. They've got enough guys there that they're trying to shift people, whether it's Hudson Odoi or Hakim Ziyech or your boy Christian Pulisic or Timo Werner or Kai Havertz. The list goes on and on. Try people I've forgotten. Mason Mount. That kind of hybrid tweener. There's a lot of guys there. So, no. And I do wonder, though, is what kind of machination leads, you know, a German newspaper to report on this kind of move. So you wonder if something's happening in the background. Jules, there's a new young star that has Paris Saint-Germain all excited. Tell me more. Why should I be excited about a 6'5" center back?
Listen, El Shaddai Bishiabu. Everyone remember the name because he's 6'5".
Say it again. El Shaddai Bishiabu.
Paris born and bred. 16 years old, turned 16 in May. He's 6'5".
So is Upamecano. What's the big deal?
Nah, man. This is something else. And I promise you, listen, for all the coaches that he's had since he was a kid in Saint-Denis, north of Paris, to then getting into the PSG Academy when he was 9, all the way to now, training with the first team, Pochettino is like, I've never seen anything like this before. Gab, he's 16. He's not just 6'5" and 15 stones. He's so good, left-footed centre-back, that passes the ball like a midfielder, that is so quick. He's got everything. It's unreal. Right. People at the club think that he can beat Kingsley Coman's record for the youngest player ever to play for PSG, which is 16 and 8 months. So he still has a bit of time as well ahead of him. He can play in the French Cup or, you know, whatever, domestic cups. He's that good. And he made his debut with the first team yesterday on Wednesday in a friendly against Le Mans. I know he was only a friendly, but he played the second half and was just amazing. The reading of the game.
Let's repeat
everything.
The name, because people are going to be like, hey, who was that guy? El Shaddai Bishiabu.
16 years old. Amazing. Really. And you know, I'm not one to go like crazy about, and not because he's Paris born and bred like me and he's one of mine, but this is something we've never seen before. Promise you. Really, really exciting.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
UEFA head of referees Roberto Rossetti gave his post-Euro verdict, you know, as they often do, on officiating. Gab, you were there. You were listening on Zoom. What did he say, and how happy was he?
I was just listening. I was talking to him. Obviously, they put their positive spin on it. So they said they were overall they were very happy with the officiating. I think most people would generally be happy. We can always point out to a couple decisions that were controversial, but I think a lot of them was more about what could have gone the other way. I know there's a petition about the Jorginho one on Grealish, but you can tell from the petition and the way that people wrote it, they're not football fans.
Exactly.
Crazy. But What I really liked about this is, you know, with the Sterling melee penalty, right?
Jensen.
Yeah. He released the audio of the conversation between Danny McAlee and his VAR. Admittedly, it's in Dutch, but still, no. But you can make out. And I love this transparency. He said, "Look, we got nothing to hide. This is what happened." Right? McAlee saw it in real time. The VAR, all you had to do, McAlee said, "I saw it. There was contact from Mele on Sterling." The VAR said, "Yeah, the picture showed that there was contact, and there was contact." And under those circumstances, system worked. That's what you want to see, right? Again, I would have probably been even happier if he'd taken another quick look himself.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think this transparency is very positive. And you know, overall, there's always going to be some errors. And he said, "We don't want to re-referee everything," and that is part of the ethos. Part of me says, "I get it. You don't want to re-referee everything." Yeah. I wonder if for really big games, Spain, Switzerland, whatever, big incidents, you know,
maybe
maybe you should have more latitude to take another look. But otherwise, I'm fine. This Hector Bellerin to Inter story, which has me all excited, won't go away. Jules, what's the situation?
The situation is that Inter, as we know, are looking for a player to replace Achraf Hakimi, who left for PSG.
He's the obvious choice,
isn't he? No. There's Dumfries, there's him, there's other players that I guess could come in. And
Arsenal, he's not central to Mikel Arteta's plans.
He only has 1 year left on his contract, I believe, so it might be the right
time. Arsenal won't give him a new one?
I don't think so. And maybe that's his camp.
I'm bored with Bellerin. He's a nice guy. Can we talk about Boadu and Stengs coming to Liga?
Oh, yes.
This is what you really want to talk about.
Because Liga, as you know, the best league in the world.
The League of Talents.
They're getting more talents. Boadu will sign for Monaco. And Calvin Stengs, who is his teammate at AZ Alkmaar. They had obviously two very, very good seasons together. I've signed already for Nice. So Stengs in Nice. And yeah,
they can go visit each other on weekends. That's awesome.
They can probably still live with each other.
They can live together. This is the awesome part, because I think the distance, if you live in between, it's only a 20-minute commute either way if you live in between Nice and, and Monaco, right?
Not even that. You know, so
this is
this is great.
Like Boadu, Calvin, this is what you guys do. Just set up shop on the Côte d'Azur, right? Get some cameras, turn into a YouTube reality show.
Oh my God, I love that. And they can get a bigger place, because if they're both, you know,
if they pull their resources, rent. Yeah. I don't know if is Boadu going to get the tax benefits though?
Oh yeah, of course.
If he doesn't live in Monaco,
so maybe he has to pay more of the rent than Stengs, because Stengs would be not as well off as Boadu, who pay no taxes in Monaco for sure.
Even if he lives in mainland France.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah,
nice done.
Pavel Nedved has spoken up about Cristiano Ronaldo's future. He says that he has not asked for a move. That's Cristiano, not Pavel. I'm not surprised, Gab, are you? And also, they're going to meet Jorge Mendes.
They'll meet Jorge Mendes again. I'm not surprised, because Andrea Agnelli said the exact same thing. Pavel Nedved has a special talent for repeating what his boss says like a week later when he speaks.
A good soldier. That's what good soldiers.
It's a good situation to be in. Look, he said this all along. He's got a year left. Cristiano Ronaldo will decide what he wants to do. I think Juve are actually okay with him moving on.
Yeah.
They're just going a different direction. Obviously under contract, hugely productive last season. 29 Serie A goals in 31 games. Obviously, you keep him. You're on the hook. You live with it. Serie A unveiled their fixtures for the 2021-22 season, and there's something new. Rather than playing out the second half of the season in order, like they do in most leagues, the return legs will be randomized.
So you could
play somebody on the 19th, match day 19, and then play them again on match day 21.
That's fine with me. That's fine. I never understood this mirroring the first half of the season kind of fixtures. I don't know what it brings. What difference does it make if you play the same team, you know, on the same side of the other side of the season? I like random. Good. You can have, you can have no big fixtures back to back in the first half of the season, but you can have them all maybe in the second half of the season. That's what will happen. We don't know. We see. It might make it more exciting anyway.
I'm sure some people will find reason to complain.
Of course. Daniel Sturridge is still just 31 years old, Gab, and he's on trial at Real Mallorca now in Spain. It seems crazy, but he played the last Euros for England. I mean, he was quite good not long ago.
Yeah, and he obviously hardly played. I think he didn't even have a team last year. I think he appeared for West Brom before that. Trabzonspor, and then before that, it was. Yeah, I didn't realize he was 31 years old.
I know.
Obviously, he's had a lot of issues, had a lot of ups and downs in his career. Obviously, by Chelsea, Liverpool, whatnot. I want to see people who can play still being given a chance to play. I don't know if it's going to work out in Mallorca. Not a bad place to be if it does work out. If not, hopefully. I like the fact that he still desire to go prove himself, you know, assuming that he's fit. But it just shows you, though, this last year, I was 20. And he actually played in the last year under Roy Hodgson.
Things go quickly in football. I know we always say it's a bit cliche, but things go really quick.
Very, very quickly. Freshly minted champion of Europe, Gigi Donnarumma, is now officially a Paris Saint-Germain player. But Jules, why is Ligue 1 so grinchy and weird? They won't let him take his shirt number, which is supposed to be 99.
No, the rule in France is you can have numbers up to 40 maximum.
Okay. What numbers are you wearing?
No crazy numbers. Listen, goalkeeper should have 1, 16 or 30. No other numbers. You're going to have like a goalkeeper wearing number 2.
Funny, because in my country, they have 12 and we have 4 World Cups. So that's fine.
I don't care.
In England, often they wear 13.
And 2 Euros, and you can only have 1, 16 and 30.
Uh-huh.
He will have 50 because of an exemption. PhD asked for an exemption.
This is so stupid.
He will have 50 instead of 99. Here you go.
Are you happy? No, you either stick to the rules, or if you get an exemption, let him wear 99.
In Italy, there's no rules. That's the problem. Lothar Matthäus says that England deserve to lose the Euros final because of all the bad things that they've done. Laser pointer in Kasper Schmeichel's face because of the unruly fans, because of the booing the anthems of opposition teams, booing the players, their own players taking a knee. Gab, if we didn't know him, we would think that he's trolling.
Lothar Matthäus is German. I'm kind of stuck in the middle here. I will say this. You know, some people love playing the role of the villain. It's like he's purely waving a red flag to the English media. I go for it, Lothar. Everybody's got his role in my life. You know, I got no issue with it. I just think it's funny.
Calma, Lothar.
Right, that brings us to an end. Jules, we're not going to be back because, don't worry, we will be back, but it's not going to be until August because we're both going to get some well-deserved, in my opinion, holiday.
Yeah.
Hence, you know, the cool facial hair. All right, until then, stay safe, first and foremost.
Yes.
Love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.